Hello, this is Bob Krueger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food for March 2010. The month of March is an event-filled month. As we've had many winter-like days this year, we are hope that with the 20th as the first day of spring, that spring will truly show up. On the 14th, we begin daylight saving time for this year. And on the 17th, we all become Irish for a day as we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Palm Sunday is the 28th, and Passover begins on the 29th. In my immediate family, we will observe at least 8 birthdays. In the last program, we mentioned an effort on the part of many to reclaim the family dinner. The idea was to have at least one meal where all members of the family were present without cell phones, television, or other disturbances while the family discussed what each individual had experienced that day. Here are some suggestions to help make the family dinner easier to achieve, so you're taking the plunge. You've decided you'll reclaim your family dinner, making it your own oasis of contentment among the daily chaos. Do not underestimate the power of that essential one step, the decision to just do it. And here are some ideas to help you with your dreaming. Family dinner the civilized way. Don't do it alone. Enlist the children. Demonstrate the vegetable peeler. Teach the fine points of knife, fork, and spoon and where to place them on the table. Appoint a vice president in charge of salads. Aim for 3. Start slowly. Do not set out to make dinners 7 nights a week. Start with only 1 if that's all you can handle, and build up to 3 dinners a week. You get special credit for anything beyond 3. Don't wait until tummies growl. Planning is everything. Sketch out ideas for at least 3 meals in a given week. Everyday Foods' Lucinda Scala Quinn says shopping is 50% of the equation. She likes to shop on early Sunday mornings. For those of us whose Sunday mornings are involved in our church, pick another time, preferably when the store traffic is lower. Maybe a Sunday afternoon with everyone in the kitchen would be a time when plans and some work could be accomplished in 3 dinners for later in the week. Compound recipes. Roast chicken one night turns into chicken dumplings the next night and chicken vegetable soup the night after that. Break down your meal preparation into 10-minute blocks. Whip up a quick marinade before work. Toss chicken breast and the marinade in a food storage bag. Rinse and dry salad greens and tuck back into the fridge. Rinse and chop broccoli to steam later on. Sometimes just lining up the ingredients is enough to jumpstart the later in the day cooking. Stick with what you know. No one said family dinner has to be a 5-fork affair. Simply home-cooked food is guaranteed to satisfy. If you're inclined to test one new recipe, round out the meal with standbys. Your killer vinaigrette, the no-brain baked potato, salad from the salad bar, and garlic bread from the freezer equal easy sides for that potted spaghetti and meatballs. Who cares if you didn't slave over every last bit of it? Serve family style, says chef and cookbook author Linda Schroeder. That gets everyone talking as they pass the pasta and slide the Parmesan cheese down the table. Never underestimate the aromatics. If they smell it, they'll come. Just watch what happens when you get the garlic sizzling and the onions browning. Same goes for cinnamon wafting from the oven. The aromatic bliss floating from the kitchen is the surest dinner bell as ever. Some down-home details. Dress up the dishes. A dash of cinnamon atop that poured from the jar of applesauce. A sprinkling of paprika on the sour cream. You need not knock yourself out on every dish to impart that mama's at the stove dash of love from the kitchen. Splurge on new cloth napkins. Light candles on a Tuesday night. Tuck fresh herbs on the plates. You'd be surprised how these little touches revive the flagging spirit of all who gather here, especially the cook. Even though we eat dinner as a family every night, I feel this information has given me some ideas for the next time I prepare an evening meal. If your doctor wrote you a prescription for a baked potato, you might think he or she was nuts, but don't be so far-fetched. You get all these healthy benefits from one medium-sized baked potato with the skin on. Let me emphasize the skin. You get 925 milligrams of potassium to help you keep your blood pressure in check. You get 50 milligrams of magnesium to help reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes. You get 5 grams of fiber to help keep your digestive system running smoothly and your appetite under control. All of these benefits, and I like a baked potato, a word of caution. Don't deep fat fry or drown your potato in sour cream, butter, and cheese. Just a little will do the job. Have you heard that cooking in a microwave oven causes food to lose nutrients? If so, this rumor is not true. Microwave foods may be better than stovetop prepared foods. That's because the microwave oven zaps it quickly and without much water. One study found that spinach retained only 77% of its B vitamin folate when cooked on a stove, retained all of its folate when cooked in a microwave oven. With spring right around the corner, gardeners begin to think about planting. Will there be a shortage of vegetable seeds for the gardeners in 2010? It is possible, says Barbara Melleray of D. Lambeth Seeds of New Freedom, Pennsylvania. After back-to-back good years, 2008 salmonella scares and 2009's poor economy sent homeowners into the garden to grow their own food. You might expect a backslide in seed sales, Melleray says. New gardeners get discouraged or bored. But she said, in 2009, we had the worst growing season in 50 years. Rain and disease destroyed crops and with them the seeds for next year's garden. Onion sets and a cucumber seed shortage, she predicts. We are told that the harvest of the cucumber crop was catastrophically attacked late in the season by the woolly mildew. There was fruit, but no viable seeds inside. We're being told that many varieties simply won't be available. Likewise, Europe had a terrible harvest last year, and Europeans bought much of their produce from the United States, taking with it the seeds. And as further proof that we're in a global marketplace, Europeans and Australians have taken a fancy to eating sprouts, tons of sprouts. When you go vegetables just to get the sprouts, nothing gets the fruit, she says. And they're consuming gigantic quantities of seeds just for the purpose of sprouts. Word of possible seed shortages must be leaking out, Melleray says, because retailers are telling her that they've had their best December in years. It's certainly true that vegetable gardeners are ordering seeds earlier and earlier, but she says she thinks it's more likely that gardeners are acting out of fear of shortages. It would be a shame, she says, if young gardeners for whom it just became a passion should face such a setback. A recent announcement about a new ketchup container said by some to revolutionize the fast food industry. For decades, there was only one way to get the humble ketchup packet, and that was messy. Now fast food lovers have a choice, the traditional squeeze play or the option to dunk. You want fries with that? In the minivan? No problem. The new ketchup pack, unveiled by the H.J. Heinz Company, is shaped like a shallow cup. Its top can be peeled back for dipping or the end torn off for squeezing. It holds three times as much ketchup as the traditional packet. Customers at a McDonald's in Covington, Kentucky would welcome the redesign. You use up a lot of ketchup now with packets. I always get extra ones, says Skyler McDermott, 29. Now maybe you won't have to use your teeth to open the new ones. Heinz struggled for years to develop a container that would let diners dip or squeeze and produce it at a cost acceptable to its restaurant customers. The packet has long been the bane of our consumers, says David Szyzinski, the vice president of Heinz Ketchup. The biggest complaint is there's no way to dip and eat it on the go. Designers found that what worked at a table doesn't work when many people use ketchup packets in a car. So 2 years ago, Heinz bought a used minivan for the design team members so they could give their ideas a road test. The team studied what each passenger needed. The driver wanted something that would sit on the armrest. Passengers wanted the choice of squeezing or dunking. Moms everywhere wanted a packet that held enough ketchup for the meal and didn't squirt onto clothes so easily. Heinz is rolling out the packs this fall at selected fast food restaurants nationwide. It will continue the traditional packets. Whether restaurants buy the new packets will depend on cost, experts say. One of the top uses of ketchup in this country is on French fries, said Harry Balzer, the vice president of the research firm NPD Group. One of the patterns of behavior in this difficult economic climate that continuing to do okay is ordering eating in your car. The company said it's still working out prices with its customers, but the new packet should cost only a little more, even though it holds more ketchup. Heinz is by far the biggest ketchup maker. Through exclusive contracts with chains such as Burger King and Wendy's, McDonald's, the nation's number one burger chain, does only limited business with Heinz. Heinz sells more than 11 billion ketchup packets every year, but neither Heinz nor the major chains would say who plans to carry the new design. Morningstar restaurant analyst R.J. Hotovy says if the restaurants adopt it, the transition will be gradual. It has to be proven that this is something that saves money on behalf of the restaurants or cuts down on waste, he said. It looks interesting, but ultimately you have to provide something of value to the restaurants. Customers may force the issue. Rants about messy packets have helped spawn hundreds of anti-ketchup packet groups on Facebook. This comes as no surprise to Susinski. We created the packet in 1968, he said, and consumer complaints started around 1969. Over the years, the first ladies of our countries have had a project that was dear to their hearts, and they spent much energy promoting a particular effort. And Mrs. Obama is no different. It is clear that Michelle Obama loves French fries. The first lady talked about this guilty pleasure all the time, trying to ward off the notion that she's a nutritious nanny, even as she controls we Americans to eat better. She titles her program, Let's Move. And now her conversation with the public about the nation's health and fitness is about to get a lot more pointed. After laying the groundwork for nearly a year, she began a campaign against childhood obesity, which she hopes will change how millions of Americans will eat, exercise, look, and feel. To succeed, you'll have to take on powerful forces that have left one-third of the children overweight. Busy parents who hit the drive-in rather than cook a balanced meal. Schools where cafeteria meals compete with vending machines and a la carte lines stocked with soda and candy. Food companies that spend billions hawking fatty snacks to children. Poor neighborhoods where nary a banana or a head of broccoli can be found on store shelves. The screens, computer TV, or video keeps kids off their bikes. And as an example, I saw a cereal commercial for General Mills telling of all the vitamins and minerals contained in four of their cereals. The catch is that all four of these items were sugar-coated. Mrs. Obama's goal is ambitious, to put America on track to solve the childhood obesity problem in a generation. Thank God it's not to me, she said recently, stressing that the solution would require stepped-up efforts from parents, schools, businesses, nonprofit groups, health professionals, and governments. To underscore that point, she's brought together cabinet members, mayors, sports and entertainment figures, business leaders, and more to announce the details of the administration's efforts that will involve promoting healthier schools, increasing physical activity for kids, improving access to healthier foods, and giving people more nutritional information. Health advocates couldn't be happier to have a popular first lady adopting childhood obesity as her cause. They already know how difficult the problem is to solve. You just don't go from epidemic obesity to epidemic leanness, said Yale University obesity expert Dr. David Katz. Judith Palfrey, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, says the problem needs a national solution. So having the president and first lady take the lead on this, particularly the first lady, the first mom, is giving us the reinforcement we've needed, Palfrey said. Here are some of the ideas suggested as ways to help address the childhood obesity problem. Increase the federal money to make healthier school lunches for poor kids. Improve nutrition standards for school lunches. Get the chips and donuts out of school vending machine. Expand the time for school recess and physical education. Encourage food manufacturers to stop targeting children with ads for high-calorie treats on TV and in online video games. Do more medical screening for obesity in children, improve food labeling, provide more behavior counseling for overweight kids. It would seem that our First Lady has chosen a subject that really needs to be addressed. More power to her. In a letter to a food editor, this question was asked. I made potatoes for potato dumplings, but they were too starchy and gummy. Is there a way to fix them? The editor's answer was this. You could try stirring in a bit of flour to see if it makes the mixture dry enough to handle. But it's better to avoid making starchy, gummy mashed potatoes in the first place. Two things usually cause that problem. First, make sure you're using the right kind of potatoes. Potatoes generally fall into two types, waxy, such as redskin potatoes, or russets, including Idaho's and Yukon Golds. Russets have a drier texture when cooked, so they do a better job of absorbing butter and milk when you mash them. Redskin potatoes are great in stews, but they make gummy mashed potatoes. Second, never use a food processor to mash or puree potatoes. The slicing action of the blade ruptures more cell walls, releasing too much starch and resulting in a gummy texture. The best way to mash potatoes is with a hand tool, such as a ricer or a potato masher. You know, that thing with the wavy metal bottom that sort of looks like an old TV antenna, or with a mixer. There's also a debate over whether to beat in the milk or the butter first. Some sources direct you to beat in the butter first, but I find butter coats the starch molecules and keeps the potatoes from absorbing the milk, giving the potatoes a heavier texture. For green potatoes, I beat in the milk then the butter. That's what the editor said. Another letter to the food editor asked this question. I boiled a chicken to make soup. I put the pot with the chicken and the cooking liquid into the refrigerator, but it took almost 6 hours to become cold. It was still quite warm for several hours. Should I have done it differently? And the answer, it's never a good idea to refrigerate large quantities of food while hot. It takes too long for the cold to penetrate into the center of the container, and it raises your refrigerator temperature, affecting the quality of the food around it. The best way to chill any large batch of food is to let it stand for a while at room temperature, maybe 30 minutes or so, until it's no longer piping hot. Then divide into smaller containers and refrigerate. In the case of your chicken, it would have been better to remove the chicken from the broth and let it stand until cool enough to handle. Then remove the meat from the bones. Strain the cooking liquid and put it in a couple of small containers. Then either wrap the chicken and store it separately until you're ready to add to the finished soup, or divide it among the containers of broth. If we need a proof that there are more couponers out there, here are some new numbers from Inmar, a Winston-Salem company that processes coupons nationally. Last year, 2009, Americans redeemed 3.3 billion coupons for packaged goods, a 27% increase over 2008. That's the first time in 17 years there's been an increase, and what a large increase indeed. Of course, we don't need Inmar to tell us that the number of people redeeming coupons is on the rise. All you have to do is go grocery shopping. Old people, young people, men and women. It seems as everybody has discovered those little scraps of paper, but it's fantastic, and it's a trend that likely will continue even after the economy improves. Sue Stock, who writes for the News and Observer, said, "My husband once asked me if I thought I'd always be a couponer, even if someday we make more money than we do now, and I told him yes, because now that I know how much I can save, to not do so would be like throwing money away, and you all know I would never do that. All I will add is a suggestion that you're not saving money if you use a coupon to purchase something you will not use." In a recent newspaper story in an out-of-state paper, a coupon handling company said the average person redeemed $3.54 worth of coupons during the year of 2009. This would indicate to me that many people don't use coupons. I know that many of you redeem more than $3.50 worth of coupons in one shopping trip. In a recent conversation with a friend, he told me he was going to quit eating breakfast because he's gaining weight. He's an older gentleman who is quite thin, and I tried to persuade him that he needed to eat breakfast in order to start his day right. I then came home and found a column from Bob Conder, who writes for the Chicago Tribune, and here's what Bob had to say. Comfort foods aren't supposed to be entirely healthy for the body. There's usually a trade-off between, say, plates of fried chicken and mashed potatoes soothing your flattened psyche and potentially unflattening your stomach. Nutritionist Susan Kleiner says there's one comfort food that doesn't pose such a dilemma. It is cereal, one of the best foods in any active person's diet. Whether it's cooked or ready to eat from the box, cereal is especially comforting when you get up in the morning. Kleiner, a Seattle-based nutritionist affiliated with the University of Washington, said, "We don't want food to be stressful. Eating cereal regularly forms a healthy habit, which is the opposite of stress." Kleiner is a formidable expert on the subject. She's author of a newly revised sports nutrition book called Power Eating. A team nutritionist for the Seattle Supersonics professional basketball team, and a personal advisor to more than 40 clients who have lost weight and kept it off for the last 7 years. Everyone she counsels makes cereal and breakfast a part of a new eating plan. What's more, Kiner is a cereal eater extraordinaire. "I'm about as boring as you can get," she said, laughing. "I've eaten shredded wheat every morning of my life since I was about 10 years old. I used to love tearing up the big biscuits when I was a child. I have since switched to the bite-sized biscuits. I mix them with cashew cereals, both the puffed cashew and the newer versions." In fact, Kleiner takes a box of shredded wheat, some plastic bowls and spoons when she travels. She can usually find a small carton of milk easy enough after a morning walk or run. Kleiner and other nutritionists have several reasons for their enthusiasm about cereal for breakfast or as a snack or even for dinner. Perhaps more important, cereals, especially the ready-to-eat versions, encourage us to eat breakfast. "It's the most important meal of the day," Kleiner says. "Breakfast fires you up for the day. It's critical for anyone who is physically active. I require all of my clients to commit to an exercise program before I work with them on losing weight. And since we mostly eat at home, the meal provides an opportunity for nutrition density. You can consume a lot of good things with very little fat. Oats are especially effective for reducing cholesterol. Oatmeal is the obvious choice, but other oat cereals such as Quaker Oat Bran and General Mills Cheerios also fit the profile. Another plus for cereal is its positive effect on calorie control. Kleiner says research clearly shows that people who eat breakfast are better able to control how much calories and fat grams they consume the rest of the day. Breakfast eaters are even better at calorie control. A word about serving sizes. They range from a half a cup to a cup depending on the cereal. People might eat two or more serving sizes at breakfast, and that's not a problem if you select a low-sugar cereal. One serving is between 80 and 180 calories for those cereals, so even doubling is not an unhealthy move for an active person. Cereals high in sugar can add more calories than ideal. Kleiner says cereal can serve the active person at a time other than breakfast. She suggests dry cereal for a snack before or after working out, cold cereal with non-fat milk on hot nights, or hot cereal will warm you in a hurry when the weather turns chilly. Boost your meal with fresh or dried fruits, nuts, or even a tiny bit of sugar, if you please. I'm a cereal for breakfast person, and I use many of the ready-to-eat varieties. I usually find that private label cereals are the best buy. I often mix two or more varieties and enjoy them together. We often have oatmeal for dinner, especially when the weather is on the cool side. Do you like ice cream, especially if it don't cost you anything? Mark this date on your calendar. Ben and Jerry's has announced its free cone day for 2010. It'll be March 23rd. From noon till 8 p.m., you can stop by at Ben & Jerry's Scoop Shop and receive a few scoop. Be warned, the line will be really long. My calendar is already marked. We all know that we live in a changing world, and at times some changes makes us uncomfortable. A recent story tells us that David Mao, the chef and part owner of the Duck and Dumpling Chinese restaurant in downtown Raleigh, is retiring. Many of us remember Dave as the chef and operator of the Mandarin House in Cameron Village. We had eaten there many times and always made to feel welcome as we ate delicious food. David has trained a replacement, and the food should remain delicious. Familiar Italian restaurant on Western Boulevard, Amedeo's, will soon be under new management. Located at 3905 Western Boulevard, will soon be owned and operated by David Harris and Rodney Bird, the duo behind the Remington Grill restaurant chains. For Amedeo's, NC state landmark since Dick DeAngelis opened it in 1963, will be the first non-family member owner. Jan DeAngelis, the daughter of the founder, has been operating the restaurant. David Harris says he wants to assure Amedeo fans that the menu will not change. A deal between Pepsi Bottling Ventures in Raleigh and Cheerwine means it will soon be easier to find the soft drink in the Raleigh in the Triangle. Cheerwine is a cherry-flavored drink made in Salisbury. The drink was invented in 1917, but hasn't always been easy to find east of Greensboro. Still, in recent years, Raleigh has become one of its top markets. The distribution deal with Pepsi Bottling Ventures will only help that. We're pleased to have the two most iconic brands that both were created in North Carolina, Cheerwine in Salisbury and Pepsi in New Bern, together in our home base, Raleigh. Paul Finney, a senior vice president for PBV said in a statement. I didn't know that Cheers wine was as old a product as it is. It's almost 100 years old. Approximately 3 million children in the United States suffer from food allergies, and 8 foods account for roughly 90% of all the food-related allergic reactions. Milk, eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, soy, and wheat. According to health experts at Duke Hospital, the best way to determine if your child is allergic to a food is if a reaction occurs when he or she eats that particular food. The gold standard for diagnosis of food allergies is a supervised oral food challenge in a clinical setting. I advise parents to look for immediate reactions in their children following ingesting each time a new food is introduced, said Michael H. Land, M.D., pediatrician, allergist, and immunologist at Duke Children's Consultative Services of Raleigh. Common symptoms of allergic reactions including hives, itching, swelling, throat tightness, wheezing and coughing, shortness of breath, vomiting, diarrhea, and abdominal pain. Two other primary methods to assess food allergies are skin prick tests for suspected food and blood tests, Dr. Land said. Consult your pediatrician about whether or not your children may be suffering from a food allergy and discuss ways to prevent further allergic attacks. The Purdue Poultry Company of Salisbury, Maryland, are publicizing the news that they have received a new U.S. Department of Agriculture process verified certification. The certification means that the USD officials have audited the company's claims that its chickens have all had a vegetarian diet and are raised cage-free and humanely. The certification applies to Purdue's fresh chickens as well as its Fit and Easy line of boneless chicken. Purdue is redesigning its packaging to prominently display the certification seal and has introduced a website where consumers can go for more information. North Carolina shoppers will be the first to see the new packaging, partially because of its proximity to their processing plants. It took 3 years for Purdue's 2,200 farmers to implement the changes necessary to get the certification, but Purdue says the moves are necessary. Customers are more conscious of what's in the product, how it's raised, and what we're doing, Mr. Purdue said. There are all these things that used to not be part of the buying decision, even though this is going to be more costly, we think, long term. Purdue Poultry employs 22,000 people, 4,000 of whom live in North Carolina. The company has processing egg facilities in Rockingham, Lewiston, Concord, Statesville, and Yadkinville, and also works with 800 farmers throughout the state. The USDA certification is a unique way to address customer concerns about the unfair treatment of chickens, but also changing a product that hasn't experienced much change. In our business, innovation is the furthest processed items, such as the perfect portions or ready-to-cook strips, he says. But doing things with the raw side is more difficult. We are running out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen at the same time next month, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and the content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. And so long until then.